Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, a water management project is being conducted at the Discovery Farm near Langham. That's northwest of Saskatoon. We'll speak with Jeff Shano, a professor in the Department of Soil Science at the University of Saskatchewan. He's also the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture Chair in Soil Nutrient Management. Agriculture Canada has launched a new internet tool to help farmers take the guesswork out of crop yields. We'll speak with the manager of the National Agroclimate Information Services for Agriculture Canada, Catherine Champagne, about that. The director of risk management with Hams Marketing Services says uncertainty over what will happen with COVID continues to result in considerable hog market volatility. We'll speak with Tyler Fulton. All that and more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Phil, it's trying to warm up out there, but we are getting some fog right now.
Yeah, and the fog is obscuring and overcast, and it's just not going to have too much luck breaking through to some sun. We may get some breaks in the overcast, brighter skies, some filtered sun at times, but between the fog and the cloud cover, our warming is going to be limited. We should make it up to a little above freezing, thinking 4 degrees for the high, but it's a slow process. In some areas, the fog is not going to relent too much, and the cloud cover is going to remain stubborn, and these areas aren't going to get much past 1 or 2. But there is at least some potential to get to around average this afternoon. The wind is down, and that's what's actually allowed the fog to settle in. We'll be in the 8 to 16 range through the afternoon from the south to southeast, and tonight as well, pretty light wind. It'll shift around into the west-northwest, though, down to -3 tonight. Mostly cloudy. Again, I qualify the word cloudy with mostly because there will be some breaks. In fact, in some spots, we even get into a partly cloudy sky where the cloud basically goes to a 50-50 split or so. But overall, if you balance out the night, the cloud cover will hold the advantage. Not much falling from these clouds, but just a lot of cloudiness around. -3 tonight, back up to around 4 tomorrow. And again, it's a fairly cloudy day. Pretty overcast. Limited thinner spots. I'm not even going to call them breaks tomorrow, because tomorrow is just a thicker cloud bank overall. We'll be around 4 for the high once again. Tomorrow, the difference is that the wind picks up. Wind turning back into the south to southeast at 20 to 35 kilometers per hour, and then starts to gust later in the afternoon, gusting close to 50, and that's just the beginning of the wind. For Friday night and Saturday, the wind is going to be much stronger, sustained in the 25 to 45 range. Gusts could get into the 50 or 60 range at times, and there'll be a little bit of light snow. We may see a few sprinkles as it gets started Friday evening, but mostly it's going to be flurries. We do drop below freezing down to around -2 and barely back above freezing on Saturday. Early flurries will dry up. This is not going to produce much as far as accumulation goes, not much more than just a coating, maybe a centimeter or so, but it is going to leave us with the cloud cover. It's going to leave us fairly cool, and again, that wind driving the wind chill down too. But the cool is not locked in. We still have a warm-up to get through, and we're going to start seeing that within a five-day range, partly to mostly sunny Sunday. We'll be around 5, and we'll double that for Monday, or more than double it, I should say. My math a little off today. Around 11 with the sunshine Monday, and it looks like much of next week temperatures are at least above average, many days double digits.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw, Swan River, and Brandon are at minus 1 degree, Dauphin plus 2, Shoal Lake Russell minus 2, Roblin minus 3. Regina is at plus 1, Saskatoon plus 2, Hudson Bay minus 2, Broadview Mooseman minus 1, Indian Head 0, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington plus 3. The Yorkton-Melville region has fog, a southeast wind at 17 kilometers an hour. 97% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 2 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 6 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of plus 3 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 3 degrees. There was 0.6 millimeters of precipitation that fell in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is plus 3. The normal low is minus 6. The sun rose in Yorkton at 7:38 this morning, and it will set at 5:31 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hot spot was Melitta at plus 5 degrees. The cold spot Thompson at minus 20. The Saskatchewan hot spot yesterday was Leader at plus 9 degrees. The cold spot Collins Bay at minus 21 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return right after these messages. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's 12:24 in Saskatchewan, 1:24 in Manitoba. A water management project is being conducted at the Discovery Farm near Langham, northwest of Saskatoon. It will evaluate several management practices meant to reduce nutrient runoff, which is lost money for farmers and can create environmental concerns in areas where the water drains. The goal is to design a drainage plan that meets regulatory requirements and optimizes land productivity while preserving the environment. We spoke to the project lead at the Discovery Farm Field Day last week, Jeff Shano, a professor in the Department of Soil Science at the University of Saskatchewan. He is also the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture Chair in Soil Nutrient Management.
On one quarter section here at the Discovery Farm, there's actually 8 basins which have had some drainage installed to consolidate and remove the water from those 8 individual basins and consolidate them all into one larger wetland area.
Is it based on what a regular field could look like in Saskatchewan?
Yeah, really what we're trying to do here is really simulate what a producer might do to consolidate the water on his land by moving the water from smaller basins into one larger basin. And then what we're particularly interested in is once the water's been removed, what kind of best management practices could be applied to best use the nutrients in that soil in those basins once the water has been removed, as opposed to having those nutrients removed from those basins by runoff water moving out of those basins across the landscape and potentially into a water body where they might cause an issue.
Will this project help with drainage issues in the province?
Yes, because really what it involves is really keeping the water on the land area, but consolidating the water in one place. And also really trying to make the best utilization of the nutrients that are in those soils once that water has been removed from them. Really, when it comes to utilizing those nutrients, it involves some strategies like maybe growing forages to recover the nutrients out of those soils, reducing the fertilizer inputs in there to use the nutrients that have been built up in there over time, and also maybe considering some types of strategic tillage options in order to reduce the export of soluble nutrients out of the crop residues that are left behind.
So what's happening right now?
Yeah, so what we've got out of eight basins is we have duplicates of four treatments. We have a control treatment, which is kind of business as usual. Then we have a management that we're going to be establishing in a drain basin, which involves the use of a cover crop, a forage crop, that would include a legume in there that has a high nutrient removal and utilization potential. Another treatment that we have is a type of 4R, or right source, right rate, right time, right placement type of assessment of fertilizer use, a kind of precision application of fertilizer where we reduce or eliminate the fertilizer that's applied in the basin so that we can better use the nutrients that have accumulated in that basin in the previous years. The final treatment that we're evaluating is a tillage operation, a light tillage operation, in order to incorporate some of the residue into the soil, and hopefully that will reduce or eliminate the movement of soluble phosphorus in the spring snowmelt runoff.
Is this a unique project in that it's being done in a former lake field?
Yeah, this is a great opportunity for us to work in a kind of real-world situation where we have an entire farm field where the type of approach to water consolidation is similar to what an average grower would do perhaps out there, and to be able to look at things on a landscape scale. And that's really good when it comes to scaling up from laboratory or controlled environment or small plot studies, to be able to actually take some of these best management practices out on a field scale and evaluate them.
And what happens next?
So right now what's happened is that the basins have been identified and that drainage has been implemented, so that we've taken some baseline soil samples this fall from each of our eight basins that we're using in our evaluation, and next spring those treatments will be applied. We'll be seeding some forages in two of them, we'll be applying our variable rate fertilizer application strategy in two of them, and we'll also be doing some of the strategic tillage, some vertical tillage on our residue incorporation, our two basins in the spring as well. So we're just getting started. Then we'll be sampling every year. We'll be sampling soils, and we'll be also sampling water. And at different points in the different basins, we'll also be doing some simulated snowmelt runoff assessments of our treatments in each of those basins. And we'll be doing that for 3 years.
Jeff Shano is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at the University of Saskatchewan. And he's also the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture Chair in Soil Nutrient Management. He's involved in a water management project going on at the Discovery Farm near Langham, northwest of Saskatoon. Growers will get updates on the research each July during the Ag in Motion Field Day. It's now 12:29 in Saskatchewan, 1:29 in Manitoba. And it's time for the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
A private memorial is planned for longtime Alberta MP Don Mazankowski, whose work in the cabinets of Prime Ministers Brian Mulroney and Joe Clark included a stint as Canada's Minister of Agriculture. Mazankowski, the MP for the East Central Alberta riding of Vegreville from 1968 to 1993, died late Tuesday at the age of 85. In Clark's short-lived Tory government from 1979 to 1980, Mazankowski served as Transport Minister and Minister responsible for the Canadian Wheat Board. Returning to the government benches with Mulroney in 1984, Mazankowski served as Deputy Prime Minister from 1986 to 1993, Minister of Finance from 1991 to 1993, Minister responsible for Alberta from 1986 to 1992, and House Leader in the House of Commons for the Tories from 1986 to 1988. In September of 1988, Mazankowski replaced John Wise as Minister of Agriculture, a post he held through to April of 1991. Mazankowski is credited for his work during that time on the Federal Farm Income Protection Act and the Western Diversification Program, and he was considered a strong advocate for the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. Agricultural commodities trader Bunge Limited raised its 2020 outlook after reporting a 91% jump in adjusted third-quarter profit on Wednesday as strong soy processing margins and robust demand for soy products boosted its core agribusiness segment. Bunge shares rose almost 7% to their highest level in more than a year. The company raised full-year profit guidance for a second straight quarter, projecting 2020 earnings of $6.25 to $6.75 per share, U.S. dollars. The company cited better-than-anticipated agribusiness results and a more favorable outlook for its edible oils unit, despite the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Grain traders such as Bunge and rivals Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, and Louis Dreyfus, known as the ABCDs of grain, have faced headwinds from the pandemic as shuttered restaurants and reduced travel disrupted demand for food and fuel. Infection rates are rising again globally, triggering fresh lockdowns and other restrictions. But they have weathered the crisis better than other industries, and Bunge, whose Canadian businesses include oilseed crushing and processing, and a joint stake in Prairie Grain Handler G3, said its facilities continue to operate at or near normal levels. Investors pinning hopes on cannabis-infused drinks to propel growth of the legal marijuana industry may have to wait a bit longer as companies struggle to produce and distribute the highly sought beverages in a profitable way. Nearly 11 months after regulators allowed their sales, very few brands have been able to reach shelves. Canada, at the start of this year, allowed sales of so-called cannabis 2.0 products, which include edibles, vapes, and drinks. The products have been a big hit with customers during coronavirus-induced lockdowns, but producers have struggled to maintain timelines for the launch of the THC beverages. Analysts and industry insiders had eagerly anticipated these beverages, hoping they would attract large swaths of the public to pot from booze and bring back investor dollars after the industry fell out of favor due to a lack of profitability. Common production challenges include short shelf life, maintaining a consistent taste, inconsistent potency, and the length of time it takes to achieve the desired high. And residents of a city in Northern California are looking for a solution to a porky problem.
Wild pigs are destroying front lawns in San Jose. Their population's exploding in recent years.
You have no other alternative but to go and hunt them.
Marco Rendazzo lives in San Jose. Earlier this month, city leaders were considering allowing licensed trappers to take out groups of wild swine by crossbow. Now they're putting that plan on hold, but residents say beyond tearing up their yards, the wild pigs with their tusks are dangerous.
And I confronted some of them, and one of them was kind of aggressive.
Alex Stone, ABC News.
And that's the AgriView portion of our program. It's now 12:35 in Saskatchewan, 1:35 in Manitoba. We'll return to GX and Agriculture in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. Fog and minus 2 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Agriculture Canada has launched a new internet tool to help farmers take the guesswork out of crop yields. The manager of National Agro-Climate Information Services for Agriculture Canada, Catherine Champagne, says the user-friendly web tool uses data on interactive maps to provide crop yield estimates, which are adjusted during the growing season.
One of the inspirations for it is that we, within our science branch at Agriculture Canada, have a lot of data on things that affect crop yields, and we also do crop yield forecasts. So one of the things that we wanted to do was to bring all of those pieces of information, so our crop yield forecasts that are based on weather and satellite data, and historical crop yields from Statistics Canada, and a lot of the things that we produce or data sources that we get from places like Environment Canada on how much precipitation, how many heat units there have been, what is the drought status. We'd like to integrate information on pests, and that sort of thing. I mean, to bring it all together in one place so that people can look at the forecast, look at the historical yield for the area that they live in, and look at all these other pieces of information to see, okay, well, this is what my expected yields are, and what are the things that are really driving the yields that year. So is it too dry? Is it too wet? Is it too hot? How do those compare to what we've seen in the past? It's a web application that brings together all these different pieces of information so that people can sort of interactively explore the conditions in their region.
So how does a farmer benefit from this?
I think farmers will benefit because they'll be able to get all this piece of information in one place. So right now, if you wanted to look at what the yields of a specific crop were, you have to go and download that from a database somewhere, and then you can have to get the weather data from somewhere else, and you have to get things on drought from somewhere else. And it also has forecasts, which is something that are hard to find somewhere else. So it will sort of give, you know, we often get the question when there's bad weather that may be affecting farming, well, how do we expect this is going to impact the yields at the end of the season? And what we've done is we've built a model that tries to predict how that will impact yields. So I think it'll help people make decisions by knowing, you know, what is the magnitude of these events compared to things that have happened in the past, and how do we expect that it's going to affect the yield based on how we've modeled yields in past seasons.
Do you see it as a tool to help improve crop production?
Wait, I mean, it's a scientific model, so it doesn't really give advice on how to improve crop production, but it gives you all of the data about what's impacting crop production, so it allows people to look at it and see, for the particular region that they live in, what are the factors that are driving yield in that particular year, or what are driving production in that particular year, and is this going to be a better year than average, is it going to be a worse year than average, how does it compare? And I think it helps people prepare in the case of weather uncertainty.
And how does a farmer access this new web tool?
Well, you can link to it from our Agriculture Canada website. It's called Crop Metrics. So you can access the Crop Metrics tool at www.agr.gc.ca/atlas/crop metrics.
Champagne says the information is a great planning tool for farmers and agronomists. Catherine Champagne is the manager of National Agroclimate Information Services for Agriculture Canada. It's now 12:40 in Saskatchewan, 1:40 in Manitoba, and it's time for the livestock market conditions. Their presentation of Heartland Livestock in Yorkton.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for December closed at 107.97 today. That's up 3.30. February live cattle closed at 110.37, up 2.67. January feeder cattle closed at 131.35, that's up 1.40. March feeder cattle closed at 130.97, that's up 1.45. December lean hogs closed at 65.62, down 75. February lean hogs closed at 65.60, down 60. And that's the livestock market conditions. Now it's time for the Heartland Livestock Report from Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's 12:45 in Saskatchewan, 1:45 in Manitoba. The Director of Risk Management with Hams Marketing Services says uncertainty over what will happen with COVID-19 continues to result in considerable hog market volatility. Tyler Fulton says it's been difficult to identify any decisive trends.
A little bit of uncertainty, I think, is hitting the market. On the plus side, you know, from a price perspective, things are still, you know, holding up reasonably well in terms of cash prices and in particular wholesale pork prices. Especially, you know, from when we bottomed out in the summer months. So we're holding on to those gains reasonably well, but the forward prices are starting to, you know, show a little bit of weakness, and so I guess there's some concern there. I think that you know, likely is related to, you know, some of the uncertainty associated with COVID is, you know, is definitely an overwhelming theme to the market, and so with this uncertainty, it's just hard to get any decisive trend in place, we're seeing we're seeing a bit of weakness in wholesale pork prices, but they're still way better than they were.
How is processing capacity balancing with the availability of hogs at this point?
Yeah, that's always an issue at you know, around this time of year. We haven't seen any major constraints yet. I think that's probably something that's contributing to the greater uncertainty of the whole market, because what we've got is the heaviest supply of hogs coming to market here in the next month or so, and if we see any disruptions to processing capacity, then it could spell a major problem for North American prices. But as it sits right now, we're matched reasonably well, and I don't see any major concern, in the immediate future.
What role is demand going to play?
So on a demand side, I think part of the COVID influence is that we're seeing certain aspects of the supply chain that are attempting to secure their critical supplies, and I think that's probably contributed to the run-up in different products like ham prices and pork bellies, which hit a near-term high about 8 to 10 days ago. Now they've since come down and actually come down very sharply. They've been, correcting lower, and I think that's probably a fact that these supply chain the individual companies along the supply chain are simply trying to secure those supplies so that they can operate with some degree of certainty. In light of a second wave and possibly more shutdowns, so we've got huge volatility in individual cuts, and that's contributed to a lot of a lot of uncertainty as to where the market is going to go. So demand is really difficult to put your finger on right now. Needless to say, export wise, it's performing better than previous years. In particular, China is still short of meat protein, and we expect that's going to be the case here for at least several more months, if not years.
How are U.S. politics factoring in, most notably U.S. trade with China?
Well, that's a key point in terms of today's trade action as well. The Canadian dollar was down nearly a dollar in trade today, and so that actually serves to improve Canadian hog prices. But there again, we're seeing huge uncertainty associated with with the possibility of unclear results a week from now when the U.S. election occurs. So as it sits right now, it's contributed to an improvement in Canadian prices, where we've slid close to 2 cents over the course of the last week or so. But I think, on a whim, it seems like it could turn around and go the opposite direction. So it's adding further uncertainty to the market. and making it difficult to really plan anything.
So what should producers be watching for at this point?
Well, thankfully, producers have, you know, were really active in forward pricing about, you know, 2 weeks to 10 days ago. And so there's a lot that got a fair amount of price protection in place for 2021. And so I think for, you know, moving forward, I think with, you know, with a base level, if you've already established a base level of protection, maybe using any price rallies that come from, you know, the volatility that we've seen as an opportunity to add more protection to your pricing plan, to your risk management plan.
Tyler Fulton is the Director of Risk Management with Hams Marketing Services. It's now 12:52 in Saskatchewan, 1:52 in Manitoba, and it's time for the Commodities Update. That's a presentation of Ray Nordine, your REMAX Bridge City Realty agent.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed up for the most part today. January canola closed at $5.39.20, up $3.60. March canola closed at $5.44.10, up $3.70. December Minneapolis wheat closed at $5.52.25, up a quarter of a cent. December Kansas City wheat closed at $5.42 per bushel, down 1.25 cents. December Chicago wheat closed at $6.03.75, down 5 cents. December corn closed at $3.98.5, down 3 cents. January soybeans closed at $10.50.5, down 4.25 cents. December oats closed at $2.99.25, up 3.25 cents. And that's the commodities update.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Cooperators Yorkton, along with the Yorkton Exhibition Association, present the 2020 Virtual Feed and Forage Program. Feed testing is available this year for both forages and grain, with a nitrate add-on option for annual forages that may have been stressed shortly before harvest, that is, through hail, frost, or drought. In addition, all participants will be invited to attend a webinar to learn about interpreting test results and setting up a winter feeding plan. Entries must be in the office by 1 o'clock in the afternoon this coming Tuesday, November 3rd, in order to allow adequate time for testing. And for forage, it's one probed sample in a 2-liter Ziploc bag. For silage, a 1 sample in a 2-liter Ziploc bag. And for feed grain, 1 sample in a 2-liter Ziploc bag. Feed test results will be returned to the exhibitor prior to the webinar. It's $25 per sample, which covers the cost of testing and shipping. And the add-on for the nitrate test is an extra $10 per sample. So if you would like more information, contact the Yorkton Exhibition Office about that. A unique new app developed by University of Saskatchewan researchers offers agricultural landowners tailored information about the carbon offset value of planting shelter belts, a tool that could help reduce the carbon footprint of farming and potentially put a little extra money in farmers' pockets. They say people tend to focus on the negative environmental aspects of farming, such as the greenhouse gases emitted from vehicles, fertilizers, and grain transportation, when in fact much of this impact can be offset through planting trees. In fact, with shelter belts on their land, many farmers probably store more carbon dioxide than they use. Since the dirty 30s, shelter belts have been used to protect crops from wind, prevent soil erosion, and help retain moisture, which increases crop yield. But now, field shelter belts are being removed to make room for larger agricultural equipment and more crop production. What some farmers may not realize is that the trees, roots, and soil of shelter belts sequester enormous amounts of CO2 from the atmosphere. It's estimated that a total of more than 21.3 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent is stored in Saskatchewan's 60,000 kilometers of shelter belts. That represents about $639 million in total economic value under the federal $30 per metric ton carbon dioxide equivalent pricing system. The free online app was developed by a large multidisciplinary team of climate scientists, economists, soil scientists, and computer scientists, who were granted $1.4 million by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in 2018 as part of an effort to reduce greenhouse gases in agriculture. In its latest climate change action plan, the Saskatchewan government is proposing to pay farmers for storing carbon, not just charging agricultural producers for emitting carbon into the atmosphere. The new app helps landowners calculate how much carbon will accumulate in trees planted in shelter belts under changing climatic conditions and determine how much their shelter belts are worth in carbon offset value under the carbon tax system. It also includes a planning tool that shows the best type of trees to grow in various areas of the province and provides users with planting guidelines to ensure their new trees thrive. Now, as for this app, you can access it by going to www.shelterbelt-sk.ca. So once again, that's www.shelterbelt-sk.ca. And I believe that is actually free of charge. And Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada will begin accepting applications to the Agri-Food Pilot. The three-year pilot will test an industry-specific approach to help employers in the meat processing, mushroom and greenhouse production, and livestock raising industries fill ongoing labor needs for full-time, year-round employees. It will provide a pathway to permanent residence for many temporary foreign workers already in Canada. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba, and that means it's time to check the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Cloudy, winds south-southeast at 10 to 20, and a high of plus 4. Tonight, mainly cloudy, winds west-northwest at 10 to 20, a low of minus 3. Tomorrow, cloudy, winds southeast at 20 to 35, and a high of plus 4. For Saturday, a 40% chance of spotty flurries, winds northwest at 25 to 45, and a high of plus 1. For Sunday, partly to mainly sunny, a high of plus 5. And for Monday, sunny skies and a high of plus 11. In the Paw, Swan River, and Brandon, it's minus 1 degree. Dauphin is at plus 2. Shoal Lake Russell, minus 2. Roblin, minus 3. Regina is at plus 1. Saskatoon, plus 2. Hudson Bay, minus 2. Broadview, Mooseman, minus 1. Indian Head, 0. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, plus 3. The Yorkton-Melville region has fog, a southeast wind at 17 kilometers an hour. 97% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 2 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 6 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.